Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.
It's December 18th, 2015.
No, it's the 8th, darling.
Oh, right. I knew that. And this is Inside Out, the Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Santa Cruz Mountains, right there in Los Gatos, California. And here at Lupin, clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I'm Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider. And I'm always there to remind Errol what day it is. And we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, about the human condition and what to make of it.
Oh, that.
You know, little things like laughter, good music, and a few surprises.
That's more like it.
That is more like it.
And our show is sponsored by Go Raw. Food that's great for you and just completely righteous for your body. That body wants the best you can give it. Go Raw is right up there near the top, if not at the very top.
Not only that, but it can be found on top shelves at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco. But if you go to Go Raw, you'll find out just where Go Raw can be found in your neighborhood.
That's more like it. Well, like what, you may ask? It, the desired state to which we continually aspire. That it. So our program tonight is focusing on that's more like it. For instance, what is it like? Is it moving toward greater equanimity in myself and equality in our world community, especially with regard to economics, health, and interpersonal and social cooperation? Boy, is that idealistic. Or if that's too big a reach, how about having that meal you want cooked just the way you like it? Or your body shaped the way you'd like it? Or the people you have the most difficulty with feeling good about themselves or about you? Or how about the satisfaction from a good laugh? Or a great orgasm? Yeah, that's more like it.
I'll tell you what's more like it. It's when you've had a kidney stone and you're told by the doctors after an ultrasound that it's no longer there. That's more like it.
Cannot argue with that.
That was a good one.
Which is what happened with Rochelle today. We all breathed a sigh of relief as we saw that kidney stone just kind of getting on the stone pile of life and wandering off into its own destiny.
Oblivion is where we want it to be, and it has done it.
Well, that raises an interesting question. Can anything go that has ever been be removed into oblivion?
I don't know. I hope my kidney stone has. I never want to see it again.
When I was a kid, my most frightening thought was of oblivion. Tells you what a good hold my ego has had on me. No! Don't make me not exist. I am.
I just wrote this. You know, I am that I am. And then there's, it's like it is.
Well,
that's more like it.
It's not as much like it as it was when you did more the first time. I beg your pardon? We did that show another time.
I don't think that's like it at all.
Well, let me ask you this, because it raises some other questions about liking it, right? More like it. Like, what's the criteria that we use for liking or disliking? Obviously, pain and pleasure.
Absolutely.
Let's just do pain and pleasure. I mean, it's not a mystery.
It feels good.
Yeah, it feels good.
It doesn't feel good at all.
Yeah, that's a big one. But then We move up that hierarchy, comparable to hierarchy of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, like we need belonging, we need food, we need seltzer water, pickles.
No one can live without pickles.
Yeah, have you noticed that sometimes you go into the refrigerator and you look in, your wife's going shop and you say, honey, we need some more vanilla ice cream. Like, we need that. But we say it with conviction. Yeah, we need the vanilla ice cream. Didn't we get it for you last week, dear? No, but we need more. She says, I'll get it.
It's more like gluttony.
That's more like it. So part of what we want to look at is what does it not only look like, but one thing we know for sure, and that is we know how we do like it. Let's start there.
Come on, let me show you where it's at. Come on, come on, let me show you where it's at. Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place is
I like it like that. Come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's at. Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place
I like it like that.
They got a little place across the track. The name of the place is I like it like that. Now you take Sally and I'll take Sue, and we're gonna rock away all our blues. Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's at. Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place is
I like it like that.
Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's at. Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place
I like it like that.
Now the last time I was down there, I lost my shoes. They had some cat shouting the blues. The people was yelling out for more, and all they were saying was go, man, go, come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at. Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place.
I like it like that.
I like it like that.
That's the name of the place.
I know.
That's more like it.
That's more like it is right. That was fun.
I like it like that. Did that bring memories back to you, oh ye listeners out there?
Oh, it did me.
Because it brought memories back to us. But more than that, it's an opportunity to engage. Oh, wouldn't you know it?
First, tell us who sang that song.
Well, that was Chris Kenner, of course.
Of course.
But I know he's anxious to jump in on this subject. And boy, we missed you the last couple of weeks. But Professor Umbridge, what do you got on this one?
How delighted to be here this week. And I so was distressed last week about your health and Rochelle's health. And the two, one on top of the other. And I'm so delighted to hear that your health has improved significantly. I mean, that's more like it. Let's face it. But that might be another subject for another program. But as far as that's more like it, and the whole question we raise about what is it, first of all, I would like to point out that it doesn't actually exist, because it is what exists in the relative state, the relativity state, the state from which duality appears to be real. Because there is no it in fundamental reality. It is, as Martin Buber, the great Jewish philosopher, pointed out, thou. In other words, if you're looking for it, I like it like it, it at its best is temporary. And so one shouldn't get too fixated on the it. You'll be able to say at that point, I like it like that, or more accurately, I like it like thou. There you have it.
Well, thank you, Professor Umbridge. I think that everything material or everything other than the ethereal is temporary. So, of course, anything that we can describe as it is a temporary state. It's a temporary state. It's a temporary matter. It's temporary because it doesn't belong to the ethereal. It is bounded by stuff. It always is. You know, like even it's like, well, we're healthy now as opposed to last week when we were unhealthy. And that's more like it means we're more normal now.
All right, say more comfortable. That's for sure.
Comfortable is good, but there's that sense of normality. I was in this hospital today doing an ultrasound to find out where this little stone was.
They're actually maggots, but they don't like to tell you that.
Oh, Errol, don't say that. That is so disgusting. I won't be able to sleep.
Aren't you glad
good night.
It's gone?
Oh, God, yes.
That's more like it.
And you realize that in a hospital, there's so many levels of discomfort. There's me walking out of the hospital bullion, having discovered that I no longer have this thing in my body. And then there's the going into the hospital without knowing if it was there or not. And there are two states of being in one person within a very short matter of time. Because I wanted it more like the latter and not the former.
Hi, y'all. Tex here, Senator Beauregard. I'm also glad you're all back and that you're all feeling better, but there's that moment there in the justice system where I tend to apply my efforts and my interest when the person who's been accused of a crime or whatever is about to be told in one word, maybe two at most, whether or not his entire life is going to be abrogated and disintegrated from everything he knew it to be, because they're going to throw his ass in jail or going to throw his ass off the planet. Or he's set free and he gets to experience the freedom. And I'd have to say that the freedom is it. I mean, whatever else it is, and if it's just on a way to get to the thou, as you pointed out, well, let's just go for the freedom.
Hold on to me. Don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? From man's white flower, it's in every living thing. Man, use your power, spirit, use your wings. Freedom! 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 Freedom!
Freedom by Pharrell Williams.
I've been thinking a lot about freedom this last week. Some people think of freedom as their right to do just whatever they feel like doing. And they don't think about anybody else. You know, it's purely selfish or self-centered. And they feel free. But is that freedom if you don't include others? It's a big question for me. How free am I if I don't include another human being, if I exclude that person, if I put that person down? Am I free watching that person, you know, grovel or something, or wanting to hit them or hurt them? That's a, I don't want to use the word morality, because there's so much prejudices against certain kinds of, people go, well, this is moral and this is not moral, and it comes a very thin line. At the same time, there is, that's more like it. That you have a sense that it's more inclusive rather than exclusive.
Well, that's more like it, Rochelle. And if I could just continue for a minute, this is Senator Beauregard, but that's why it's so important for everyone to recognize what freedom is. And there is a morality, and that's why we're the American Party. Because the American Party, we have a very simple party policy or party premise. Party line, that's fine with me. This is our party line. And that is, make it possible for everyone to come to the party. It kind of clarifies up the morality issue and clears up the whether it's for me or for you, because if your goal is to make it possible for everyone to come to the party, and you're having a party, and they're not having a party because, well, they're having a pain party, which is not as much like a party as you're having if you're having a real party. And so, naturally, you're going to want to reach out, because you know that the party is about more is the merrier. And that's more like it.
Well, what do you mean by more is merrier?
More of substance of who you are. You see, everyone is just like a little bit of a little test of reality. They throw us in this life, and we like having this little piece of consciousness and this little person over here in a little corner, scurrying around, making choices that affect or don't affect everything. And so more is when that person gets more inclusive. See, it works like this. A lot of people think more is to get more food, get more money, get more power, get more sex, all that stuff. The impulse of more is built into us, but the more is how much more can you give of and express yourself in a way that includes and augments everything with which you are coming into contact.
That's more like it. Includes and augments. I like that.
Yeah, thank you. That was right on the money. I'd say that was more like, let's see how much more like it we can get in terms of what we've discussed. Think about your likes and your dislikes. Let's go back to that. The things that you like.
The things that give me pleasure and joy.
That's right.
And the things I don't like are the things that give me pain and aggravation.
And another perspective is things I like are things that make sense. I like things that make sense, but then I realize I'm the one who makes the sense out of it.
That's right, you do.
I've been rereading in the book Communion with God by Neil Donald Walsh, one of a series that started with Conversation with God. And I'm being reminded from that perspective that there is no basically need, that there is nothing actually required. But we are given this illusion of living in this world of apparent need so that we can develop, for example, the muscle of compassion, because it's probably the muscle that we develop that can help us expand through the universe with more and greater ecstasy, more and more often.
That's more like it. Yes, and I don't see how there isn't need, because in these bodies, they require certain things in order to stay alive, and therefore they become essential needs, like we need air, we need water, we need, you know, warmth or comfort or whatever, so that we don't freeze to death or boil over or whatever.
I hate when I see people boiling over. That's a god-awful sight. Don't, if you avert your eyes, if you start seeing people boiling over.
And let me tell you, if you start boiling over, you won't be averting your eyes, you'll be inverting your eyes.
Uh-huh. I agree, Senator. It's definitely uh-huh. So go ahead.
So where was I?
Well, we're trying to get what's more like it and what you like. And I made a suggestion that what makes sense. I like what makes sense.
And as you said, it makes sense to you. It doesn't always make sense to somebody else. So then we become the individuals that we are. And if that's a need for you, then it's fine. You know, you will go after it. You will look for it. I would use the word craving. Like we crave certain things. Like I crave a good conversation. I crave it. If I don't have it at all or lack of it for a long time, I mean, one that engages my mind, one that inspires me, one that makes me giggle, it's really a good conversation.
And one that makes you fondle me more and more and more.
Oh, I love that. That's more like it.
Rochelle and I engage in private fondling. A lot of you may not know that about us, but sometimes when we're alone, we actually allow the fondling muscle to have its way.
I know that's more like it, but I'm still blushing.
That's okay. So let's kind of stop here and regroup. I love that expression, regroup. What were I doing before? Well, you weren't we grouping. You were kind of I grouping. It wasn't the same.
That's ridiculous.
It's so stupid.
Yes. I hope when you edit this show, you take that one out.
Oh, sure. This is Father O'Malley here. I can't agree more with Rochelle. It would be much more like it if you took that. Well, I'd say it's a pretty crummy joke if you ask me if that was an attempt. But I'm glad to see you back, even with your silly humor and crummy jokes. But
our son said about his father, in light of our granddaughter, that some of the silliness that Errol has this very short window with children. It's sort of like from 3 to 9, and that's it. And so he's got her full attention for those years.
It's good to know your audience. People ask me all the time, well, who's your audience? 3 to 9-year-olds. That's pretty clear. If I could just jump back in here just a minute. I think you're very good at the 3 to 9-year-olds. But I would stay in that range if I were you, especially with the kind of jokes you're trying to tell.
That's more like it, Father. That's more like it.
But be that as it may, this whole thing about the thou, I love that understanding. And the thing about the need, you say there does not need or there is need. And then you have to take a hard look at what we're talking about, which is the need there. Meister Eckhart, the great mystic from the 14th century or thereabouts, within a century or two, talked about the longing. You know, I recommend Meister Eckhart. He was a great, mighty, insightful guy, but he talked about the longing. So there's this longing for the return to the wholeness that is our essential place. So if our essential place is the wholeness, that's where everything started, everything sits, everything is substantiated and held in place and allowed to move at the same time, then within that fundamental state of exactly who we are, no, there's no need whatsoever. But once we burst out into this illusion of there's something over here and something over there, well, then you got some needs.
I think I'd like to reframe how we use the word need. I don't think in a human form we ever can be without need. That doesn't mean that we don't have a desire for something when we have it. So if all our needs are taken care of, and we are breathing and we're eating and drinking and doing all those things that are essential needs, then we're not desiring them. We're not going, oh, I got to breathe, you know, I got to have water, I got to have this, because they're taken care of. But the fact that what they're taken care of doesn't mean they're not essential or needed.
That raises such an interesting question. If this phenomena that is taken care of, it's not a need then, so then there is no need. So the need doesn't exist. You can wipe, get your eraser board and take the word need right off. Because when they're being met, they're not needs. That's a paradox. It's like trying to throw a ball and measure its speed and where it is at the same time. Well, not exactly like that.
No.
I'd say if it was far away like that, you know, as much as Detroit is like Bali or something like that.
Oh, my God. That is definitely something that is not the same.
So back to that's more like it. When you be able to say that's more like it, it brings with such a sense of relief and such a sense of sigh. Oh, like all of you out there now, if you don't mind me jumping in here and suggesting to your listener audience there, I might recommend that if you haven't had a good sigh today, now would be a good time. Come on, let's do it together. Just think of me as your little social director. Good sigh. Oh, doesn't that feel better? It's good to have a good sigh now and then. And then you'll feel like when you have a good sigh, you know what's the first kin to a good sigh? A good insight. That's right. You heard it.
You've been hanging around Errol too long.
A sigh is just a precursor to the insight. With the insights that you're able to navigate your way through life a little more effectively so you can have more moments of... That's more like it.
Well, that's good because I like that it's more like it. I think when something is more like it, there's a sense of satisfaction. That's more like it. Yeah, I feel satisfied. You drink something that's so delicious and aha, that's more like it. More like what I really want in life, that taste, that deliciousness. And when that satisfaction happens, that's more like it is a natural phrase.
I love satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
If you love somebody, you better let it out. Don't hold it back while you're trying to figure it out. Don't be timid. Don't be afraid to hurt. Run toward the flame, run toward the fire, and hold on for all you're worth. Cause the only real pain a heart can ever know is the sorrow of regret when you don't let your feelings show. So did you say it? Did you mean it? Did you lay it on the line? Did you make it count? Did you look satisfy. Busy people walking by, can't help but worry some. So many things to do, so little love gets done. Empty hearts everywhere, drowning but dying of thirst. If we want love, it's not that tough. Start by giving it first. It's easy to give, baby, can't you see? Just close your eyes, open your heart, and do what comes naturally. So did you say it? Did you mean it? Did you lay it on the line? Did you make it count? Did you look them in the eye and did they feel it? Did you say it in time? Did you say it out loud? 'Cause if you did, hon, then you've lived some. And that feeling inside, that's called a satisfied. Horses are built to run, and the sun was meant to shine above. Flowers are made to bloom, and then there's us. We were born to love. We were born to love.
Satisfied by Jewel.
I understand that. I mean, I felt that so deeply. I mean, that's more like it. When you have this sense of satisfaction, it really has come about. It's happened. You ate it. You felt it. You made it with that person. Whatever it is, that desire has been fulfilled and you are satisfied. That's more like it.
That's more like it. Remember when we hide things or something and they say, you're warmer, warmer. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you're getting cold, colder, mm-hmm. where something was. I can see there's this symphony of angels looking at the human race, and each one's got a person, and they're all going warmer, warmer, colder, as the person moves towards some kind of contraction which cuts him off from life in a very painful way that's upsetting to himself and others, if not both. That's getting colder. And they say warmer, warmer, as the person starts to open themselves to a possibility of a moment that it may not be just like every other moment, one to be brushed off or passed aside because it's just so familiar, and consider that maybe this moment might offer something brand new and delightful.
That's more like it.
Of course, if I might point out that everyone knows the run and the risk that it may not be so delightful, and therein lies the reason for a lot of the barriers there. If you've been hurt a lot, you're not going to be wanting to open up. Would you say so? Oh, Rabbi, you're here. Yeah, yes, I would say if you're hurt, no, you don't want to open up. And that's why forgiveness is such a big part of getting to that's more like it. Because forgiveness is something you have to do. We in Judaism, we dedicate the whole day. Some will argue that it's the greatest holiday in Judaism, but most people would say the Sabbath because it happens more often. So you get 52 to 1. But anyway, who's counting? My point being is that you have a day of forgiveness where you wipe the slate clean. You go, boy, did I mess up this year and that year. I remember cheating a little bit with my cousin Milton, and I got a little off. They could have given me a little more, a little less, or whatever. You know, you do things, and you're human. You know, the little pipsqueaky part of you jumps out and says, me, 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 mine, mine, mine. So you understand. But that's why it's important to wipe the slate clean. Ideally, you want to get to the place where you don't have to necessarily do it only once a year, or only once a week, or once a day, once a minute, once a second. Because each second is offering you the now, served up, fresh, clean, just recently caught, for your benefit, on your behalf.
Oh, that's more like it. I like that. See, it's more like it because I like it. And I think that's a big part of it. And it doesn't take away anything from it because I like it. But it helps me understand the moreness of it. that it's not just something I like, but it's more to me. It means more to me. It touches me in a way that's more than something else. Like having a glass of water is delicious, but having a glass of water on a really cold day with ice in it, that's more like it. It's more satisfying.
Or like the best beer I ever had was on the 10th hole of a Forest Park golf course in St. Louis, Missouri, on a hot, hot, humid Missouri middle of the day. It's a 540-yard plus hole long. And you get there and you're hot. And I was sweaty and parched. And on the 10th tee, they had a beer stand. And I had the most delicious beer I'd ever had. Of course, I was only 4 years old. What did I know from beers? I had my little golf clubs, and it took me 89 on that hole. I got better the next time.
Next time you did 88, which is more like it.
It is more like it. This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth.
Is par more like it?
Par is more like it, yeah. But I wanted to ask you, oh, you listeners out there, can you think back of your last That's More Like It experience? I'll give you a second, but while you're thinking about it, this may touch it off, and that's the feeling good. I hope it was something about feeling good.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, yeah. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, yeah. I'm feeling good, yeah, I'm feeling.
That was a group called Avicii. And they're talking about feeling good. That's a song from Roar of the Grease Paint, Smell of the Crowd by Anthony Newley. And no, I was in it once, that's right. And then I directed it. And, of course, heard that song every night during the performance. Part is a black man. He comes in the middle of this game. This show is about a game that's happening between these two guys. It's kind of vague what the game is, but one guy seems to be in charge. And the other guy, whose name is Cocky, which is the part I played, is kind of being manipulated, and he can't seem to win. And this guy comes in out of the middle of nowhere and sings a song. Hey, man, birds in the sky, you know how I feel. Trees flying, you know how I feel, feeling good. When you're feeling good, you could always count on getting a really good That's More Like It.
Absolutely. I don't think there's anybody on this planet that doesn't know when they feel good. Oh, I feel good? Oh, I didn't realize that. You don't get that. When you feel good, you feel good. It's not a question mark.
If I may be so bold as to add on to that comment, hi, this is Barney. I am also delighted to be back. I tell you, I tuned into the show last week and you weren't there. I didn't know what happened to you. I was a little worried at first. So I sent Errol an email, and he emailed me back saying, it's okay, it was the oyster that was in your abdomen. I think he said it was an oyster, like a kidney oyster, something like that.
Stone.
That's right.
It was a kidney stone.
That's right. But it wasn't the size of an oyster. It was something in there.
It had nothing to do with an oyster.
I know what it was.
You may like oysters.
You may like it because the oysters, think about this, is a fabulous metaphor about what's more like it. So there you have this oyster. It's got an itch. It's got a little bit of sediment that has decided to settle inside a thing, and it starts scratching it. And it's scratching it is to kind of cover it over with the oozy stuff. But then the oozy stuff hardens. And all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but sometime later, what do you got? You got a pearl. And so the fella hands the woman of genuine pearls, and she's been wanting to know, does he love her? Does he not love her? Does he care? Is he a jerk? Is he a devoted lover or whatever? And he hands you the pearls, and he says to the girl, darling, darling, as beautiful as these pearls are, they cannot surpass you. As many as there are of them. And it cost me a fortune, too, by the way. Or words to that effect.
That's more like when you get down to romance, Barney.
But it's more like it when you are actually gravitating toward that which is real. But see, a lot of people get it mixed up because they've been abused or twisted around, and their criteria, you mentioned that earlier, your criteria for what's more like it, see, for some people, because they're so identified with their pain that when they get hurt, they are masochists. They go, oh, that's more like it, because they had the pain is more like what they're used to and how they know reality.
That's their normal.
That would be the case for a lot of people. They don't know any better. They're kind of like asleep to a possibility that's alien to that, like that it could be good and loving and beneficial to everybody all the time if we just allow that to happen. So you have to go through a series of steps with people, and it usually starts with the person kind of hitting the bottom, hate to say it. Not too many people are going to want to make those kind of life changes that are required to really get to the ultimate, that's more like it, unless they're willing to start at the bottom.
I have a different hit on this.
What's your hit on it, Rochelle?
Not like we want to start at the bottom. I think the cognizance or the awareness that this particular way of dealing with ourselves or seeing ourselves is starting to feel uncomfortable. It's not something we want to carry with us anymore. It's like I was carrying this bag one day, and I carried it a certain distance and realized it was heavy. And I had a choice. I could keep carrying it and fretting about the fact that it was heavy.
Right.
Or I could put it down, or I could change positions, or I could do something different to alleviate the pain. But I had to recognize, first of all, that it was painful and that I didn't want the pain. I didn't want to be a martyr. I didn't want to go through, oh, yeah, I can do this and get this going. I can do it even if my arm falls off and my back starts to hurt and I'll ache for 3 days. There's that sense of awareness when you make the choice that, no, this doesn't feel good and I don't want to continue it. I don't think it's a bottom thing. I think it's just a place where you don't want to continue from.
As this song so perfectly illustrates.
I don't want to love the way I loved before. I don't want to love that way no more. What have I been writing love songs for? I don't want to write them anymore. I don't want to sing the way I sang before. What have I been singing love songs for? I don't wanna sing them anymore. I don't wanna be that girl no more. I don't wanna cry no more. I don't wanna die no more. So cut me down from this here tree. Cut the rope from off of me. Set me on the floor. I'm the only one I should adore.
Yeah, get me to church, but not the ones that hurt, 'cause that shirt and fight. Sergeant Long is my fulfilled. Sergeant won't let you sit still. Sergeant Man, you're broken bones and don't leave you alone. So get me down from this here tree. Take the ride from off of me. Set me on the floor. I'm the only one I should adore.
I wasn't clear about the lyrics of Take Me to Church, but not the...
Take Me to Church,
right?
First of all, by Sinead O'Connor. This person has, like, come to the place in their life. I don't want to sing those songs anymore. Cut me down from this place. Take Me to the Church is her way of saying, let me open up. Let me come into the light. Let me realize salvation. Let me become enlightened, or however you want to
find... She just tried to kill herself again.
She was just written up, there was an article about her just this week. She tried to kill herself again?
Yeah.
But this was written some time ago. I mean, this is a woman who clearly struggles in her life. Obviously, she's a deep, passionate soul, and her songs reflect it. But she makes a decision in this song. I'm going to sing songs of loving and forgiving and eating and of drinking and living songs, because songs are like a bolt of light.
Hmm.
And love's the only love you should invite. Songs of long and frightful fails, songs that don't let you sit still, don't invite those kinds of songs.
That's more like it. Our human journey. I've just come to know a woman who spoke about the fact that she's been on a spiritual journey for over 30 years, and you can feel it in her. She's like this little open bud. She just keeps opening up. As she talks sometimes, you can almost see it in her face, because she wants the moreness. She wants the allness. She wants that sense of beyond longing, the sense of having, where you are no longer going, I want, I want, I want. She is, in most cases. I'm so aware of that when I say that's more like it. It's the absence of that longing. When I speak of satisfaction, it's the absence of longing. You're satisfied. You don't need anything anymore other than you have whatever you need.
Except when you get the munchies. And that kind of defies that kind of logic. You just have to allow for that distinction.
What did the girls at Glenn's funeral say? He taught them the golden rule, but if somebody does something to you that's really terrible, what do you... It was a funny little kind of thing.
And we're not going to get to hear it. That's
no,
it. You raise our hopes. You raise our expectations.
I'll try to remember it for next week and tell you next week. So tune in next week.
Yeah, tune in. Let's find out what happens next.
But there's this sense of satisfaction, a job well done. You know, you have that wonderful piece, performed it.
In their midst.
Of, you spoke of God as being satisfied by us. And I thought that was a kind of contradiction, because God, if we want to think about God at all, is something that doesn't have any needs.
That raises an interesting question. I wrote this other piece, and I want to come back to that piece. I wrote this piece that we've presented, performed, people have bought. Thousands of copies of this thing have been printed, more than anything else I've ever written that has really gotten out. There was a guy who would travel around the country doing Course in Miracles classes, and he'd say, send me a bunch of these, what are called letter from home. And the opening premise, the opening line, essentially, of that piece that I wrote many years ago is God trying to tell a person who's in self-doubt, I need you. Now, here I am 40 years later or something, and I'm living into an awareness that suggests that there is no need. God has no need. So it makes me look at that thing that I wrote and go, well, I don't know if I believe it. But on the other hand, it was very inspiring to a lot of people.
I think that need is different. It wasn't the need that I lacked something, but the fullness of the universe, this is the way I need it. I need it to look like this. It's sort of like if you're putting together a wonderful puzzle, I need this piece to fit there. And when it is, it will be complete. So you, my humans, you, my children, I need you to be this so that you can know this beauty, so that you can know the allness, so that you can know that. I think it's a different kind of need. It's not like a lack as much as it is such a desire to see it all together. It doesn't come out of lack so much as awareness that this is, and I'd need to see it now. Even I know the picture exists. I need to see it so that you can feel that wonderful thing.
I think you've identified the more accurate word that's the starting place, which is there is no lack. See, that might be an interesting choice of language that is just occurring to me from that perspective. There is no need. There is no lack. In a way, for me, that kind of fits kind of nicely into that little equation there, don't it, darling? Oh, you little squishy girl, you over there?
I think that it might be very true.
How about it, you all listeners out there? We're Inside Out, The Naked Truth. This is December 8th. Our sponsors go raw, and of course, December 6th just passed a couple days ago, and I was reminded of Pearl Harbor.
The 7th was Pearl Harbor.
I know, but the 6th is when I was reminded of it.
That's more like it.
Exactly. I want to get this in. That's because I'm reading the biography of Winston Churchill. It's called Alone. It's the second of the trilogy, and it's about the years from 1932 to 1940. And I'm aghast at the resistance there was on the part of the HMG, Her Majesty's government, to the whole buildup by Hitler and the Weimar and the potential threats, and how Winston Churchill saw it coming, knew it, stayed with it after one setback after another, castigated, rebuked, persecuted, practically outlawed his perspective, which was, hey, they're arming, they're going to bring us to war. We got to get on that. And the mass resistance to that, the level of don't want to have another World War I again. I'll even put my head in the sand to avoid that.
Well, I can understand it. I mean, I can really understand it in terms of the human condition. I mean, once you have been through horror, even though you know horror is coming at you, do you really want to engage it? So you do put your head in the sand. You do want to not believe it's going to come again, and you're going to have to relive horror once again, even though you haven't started it. But if you don't do anything, you will be obliterated. And once again, we use that word obliterated, which is more like terror.
Well, let me just share, since we brought it up, a little bit of that letter from home, because it really is about recognizing that true need. Just share the last few lines of it.
But above all else, I want to communicate to you that I have such a deep and abiding need for you. Don't you see that if I have taken the time and energy to create space for you in my home, that your filling that space is crucial to the fulfillment of my purposes? Don't you realize how significant your role is in the larger scheme of things? I have given you what I have given no other. Your talents, your experiences, and your personality are unique to you. Admittedly, they are not special, for all are equally beloved by me, but nevertheless invaluable and irreplaceable. I need you to express and share who you are. This is why I need you.
That's more like it. So, back to the subject. We never went away from it, did we?
No, we have not gone away from it. We've been in it, around it, and underneath it, and over it. We've caressed it, and played with it, and enjoyed every minute of it.
Speaking of caress, I came across this poem that I wrote some years ago. I may have shared it on a program, but it just seems to be kind of in keeping with our whole sensual thrust here, and it's called Fondling the Finite. And it goes, ooh, as I wriggle and writhe and feel the sensual shifting of the earth's massage. Ooh, made up to look appealing like some old whore, I guess, but still, ooh. Anyway, that was part
aborted.
Of it. Aborted. Did I abort it?
I think you did.
I think I did.
I think you made a mess of it. But you'll do it again, and that'll be more like it.
It will be more like it than the way it was. So speaking of more like it, we invite you to join us each Tuesday. Go to the website at thelaughingheart.org. Let us hear from you. Even better, estrider@gmail.com.
And if you don't want to talk to Errol, call rastrider@juno.com.
That's right, rastrider. And thank you, Go Raw, once again. And thank you, Universe Spirit, for being also our co-sponsor and your commitment to number one job for humanity, and that's facing the climate issue.
Yeah, which is not going to go away by putting our head in the sand, that's for sure.
Well, with that, I think we're going to let you go. Let me go, let me go. Okay, you're free. What do they need to remember, Rochelle?
Well, resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Well, that's more like it.
You better believe it.
Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on job one for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.